Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And welcome to the Screen Verdict Auditorium for the 2019 Screen Verdict Awards. Matt, what a night.
Oh, very exciting. Unfortunately, this year, due to current circumstances and things, the celebrities haven't been able to come out. They're all safely in their homes, even well distanced. But that can't stop us from honouring the best film and television from last year.
Yes. Yes, we have some people attending by Facebook Messenger chat. They said, can't we do a Zoom call? We said, nah, we need your personal Facebook profile, and we're going to do a Facebook Messenger video call. So
yeah,
thank you to all those in attendance as the Screen Verdict Orchestra really, really going to town. We are excited. Matt, for those who haven't been to the Screen Verdict Awards before, let's quickly explain the process.
These are the hardest awards to get in Hollywood. Everyone's clamoring all over them. We do them after the Oscars as the sort of jewel in the crown, the final award for the season. And the reason these are so exclusive is because there are only 6 awards for film and television. So, you know, the Oscars hand out about 20 trophies, the Emmys hand out a lot, Golden Globes, I don't know, they're about 20 or something, who knows. So, but we only get 6 for film and TV.
3 film awards, 3 TV awards. Literally the most exclusive award show you'll find is the Screen Verdict Awards.
And look, like, you know, there's definitely been talk, is that too many? Are we being too generous by handing out 6?
Yeah, Matt's been pushing for 4 for a long time. He says 1 film, 1 actor/actress, 1 TV show, 1 actor/actress. So let us know what you think. Whether 6 awards is too many. Should we break? How many years have we done? This might be 9 years? We'll see. We'll double check that. We'll get the interns on that one.
We've got at least six, but it's definitely more than 6.
All right. So, Matt, what has happened is Matt and I have compiled a list of nominees. There is 6 in each category, and now we're doing what no other award show does, okay? There's going to be no room for any sort of accounting errors, because the entire process is transparent. We let you into the decision process where Matt and I argue. We go back and forth live on the podcast to see who should win each of these categories.
Yeah, there's 2 votes. We're it. They haven't been counted yet. They haven't been cast yet. So no one knows the result at the moment. Not even Jonathan or I. And we will, you get an inside window into the decision-making process as we nut out the award. Super stressful for the celebrities and superstars that are listening in as we decide their fate live.
Yes, they might. Normally, you might be able to convince yourself that, oh, you just missed out, or people loved your performance, they just like someone else's even more. No, you will hear us make arguments both for and against each nominee. So they might hear themselves getting savaged live on this podcast, and we might be as surprised as the results as you guys. We don't know what's going to happen. Nothing has been pre-planned or prepared.
The good news for those listening in that are nominated, don't worry too much. At least me or Jonathan really like your performance or show or movie.
Gotta say, Screen Verdict Orchestra went on way longer than they ever have in previous years. Very impressed with the commitment there, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, team.
So let's kick it off, Matt.
Yeah. Are we starting with the TV awards or the film awards?
We're going to start off.
The order isn't decided
yet. Yeah. Let's start off with the television awards.
Ooh, TV. People love their TV. A lot of it being watched right now, I'm sure.
Yes. Okay, so I will now that the Screen Verdict Orchestra has worn themselves out, I actually need them to start up again as I read out the nominees for Best female actor in a television series for 2019. And the nominees are Rachel Brosnahan, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Veep, Priya Ferguson, Stranger Things, Sarah Snook, Succession, Jodie Comer, Killing Eve, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Fleabag. Round of applause to the nominees.
Yeah, got a very good crop.
Tough crowd. Strong year. Matt, off the rip, is there anybody that you want to put forth or rule out?
Well, could I just say, I was the one who was the advocate for Priya Ferguson in Stranger Things, who plays Erica. We love Erica in Stranger Things. I think what was really great about this season of Stranger Things was this Scoops Ahoy subplot. And you had sort of all our favourite characters from Dustin to Steve, a new character, Robin, that we loved, that really was the fun, exciting thing that gave energy to the show all season long. And when Erica joins the team, it's just like perfect. It's just like, you're like, oh, they're putting one of the funniest characters, or maybe the funniest character in the show, in the most exciting storyline. And just her line delivery, she's super young. I don't know how young is Priya Ferguson.
I will find out. She's 13.
She's old. But she just, her delivery is so good. And now she's negotiating for ice cream. I think she's fantastic in the show. I do wonder, though, maybe not the best female actress performance of the year when you combine all the dramas, all the leads, all the, like, you know, we've got a lot of different, it's a very competitive field. So I'd maybe say so glad that there was room for her to get nominated, but maybe not the winner.
Yeah, I agree. I love that storyline. I love that character. It was so great how everyone else was doing this because they had seen things from the upside down and the fate of the world was on the line, and she just wanted ice cream. She was not putting up with anybody's nonsense. I'm here for the ice cream.
That's what we can relate to. Yeah. I've never been in an upside down like environment. I've never been fighting Demogorgons. I can't connect with that. I can connect with wanting ice cream.
Absolutely. Now let's see. Rachel Brosnahan, is this for series 2 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
I imagine so.
What did you like about this performance?
Well, Rachel, isn't for season 3 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I think.
Season 3? Crikey. No.
Let me just double check, make sure the season 3 is the one that falls within our eligibility date. Yes, it came out on the 6th of December. So just snuck in. It's actually a really good season of Mrs. Maisel. I think the writing of this show is sharp. The costumes and set and music and all, like, they do such a good job on that show, and it's got a really fun energy. One comedy series, best comedy series for season 1, and I can see why. I haven't always loved the storyline turns the show takes, but I think season 3 was maybe one of their best in a 3-season show. But like, it was good. I think it was better than season 2. And she's just such a great actress. She's got comedic timing. She's funny. She does the drama really well. She's a character that pops. And I think we're so used to seeing comedians on TV that are like comedians. Like, we see Jerry Seinfeld sort of play a version of Jerry Seinfeld. We see, you know, who are the other ones? Louis C.K. playing like a Louis C.K. type character. She's playing a comedian, but she's not a comedian. So it's a real, like, you know, I wonder, you know, it'd be interesting to talk to her about how she gets sort of in the headspace of just those comedy sets, because it's not like she was someone who was out doing comedy sets before the show. Yeah, she's fantastic. Love Brosnahan.
Well, I guess I don't have an opinion. I didn't even realize there were 3 seasons. I guess I gave up on the show partway through season 2. I do like Rachel Brosnahan, and I'll believe you when you say season 3 was better than season 2. But I haven't seen it, so might be tough to get the win, but we'll see.
I think if there's no one that we're passionate about or can agree on, she could be a good winner. Like, I'd be happy with her winning.
Interesting. Well, someone that has won multiple SVs, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, in her final season of Veep. How does this compare? Is this another SV-winning, award-worthy performance?
I would say Julia Louis-Dreyfus has consistently given perhaps the best TV performance over the past 7, 8 years, how many? I know it's 7 seasons of Veep, but they took a year off. So I think what she did with this role, this character, is amazing. I think how they ended is very dark, but wonderfully acted. Yes, I think she is at the same standard she's at every year. I think, you know, how could you complain with her winning again? She's fantastic.
Yeah, the final season of Veep wasn't my favorite season, but I think it was one of the best seasons for Julia. So she's definitely going to be tough to beat. We both nominated Sarah Snook from Succession. She plays Shiv. Do you think she could be someone to take down Julia?
No, but
yeah, me neither.
I love Shiv. I was definitely more pro team Shiv than you were when we're talking about who we think would come out on top in Succession or who we'd give the company to.
Yeah, you were team Shiv. I was team Kendall.
What's that? Yeah, you're team Kendall. I can't Shiv. Not that that necessarily speaking about the acting performances. I think she gives such a great performance and maybe one of the most, like, subtle performances on Succession, but I'm a sucker for subtle performances. So I think she's so good on the show, but maybe not. Like, we're comparing it to Julia Louis-Dreyfus on Veep. I don't think she's quite up there.
If we loved it enough, we could give it the win, but it's tough to win in an ensemble show, especially when you're going up with against someone like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who is Fleabag from Fleabag. Took the world by storm in 2019, which is kind of amazing because the show came out like 3 years earlier and nobody watched it. But people went nuts for season 2 of Fleabag. Matt, were you one of them?
No. I'm going to be honest. I watched it. I thought it was good. I definitely don't want to come on here and go, Fleabag sucks, because it didn't suck. It was a you know, well-written, well-acted, good show. I don't get what all the fuss was about, though. I really don't. I don't know. Like maybe it's just not for me. Like, maybe I'm a guy. I don't know. I don't know what the issue is. And I just didn't see it being that great.
Interesting.
Like, I think if it didn't have any awards or people weren't going on about it, and I sort of go, oh, yeah, that's a really good show. But, like, I was sort of going, like, this is winning, like, all these Emmys, all these awards. The critics are saying it's the best show of the year, all this sort of stuff. And I watched it and going, yeah, it's okay. That was good. I don't get what the maybe you can enlighten me, Jonathan. What's the
That's
deal with
very
Fleabag?
Interesting. What? I liked Fleabag more than you did. I thought she was a very well-defined character. She was very honest, very real, very messy, extremely witty, very sarcastic.
That's all true.
I thought it was a very funny show. If I had to give one knock against this performance, and we're splitting hairs here, I think I like the show more for the writing than the acting. But the acting was still very, very good, and I definitely think she deserves to be nominated.
Yeah.
Whether she's better than Julia Louis-Dreyfus, we'll see. And a show which Phoebe Waller-Bridge was also a part of, was actually the showrunner for season 1, but not season 2, Killing Eve. We nominated Jodie Comer, our final nominee in the list. We recently did a Killing Eve podcast. Go check it out if you haven't listened to it already.
That's a good one.
We both like Jodie Comer, but how much? Do we like her enough to give her the award for Best Female Actor of 2019 on the television?
Potentially. She's really good. I think she's the best thing in that show. I love all the villanelle scenes. Like,
This is a very dynamic performance. We have her in some very dark scenes. She is a psychopath. She is an assassin. But also in some very funny scenes. She's doing accents. She's doing costumes. She'll do different accents depending on what country she's in, who she has to assassinate this episode. There's romantic scenes or the implication of a possible weird kind of romance between her and Sandra Oh, who's working Eve. For MI5. Yeah, she plays Eve, who's chasing after her. There's kind of action. I mean, as far as like range go, you don't get a lot more than Villanelle in Killing Eve.
Yeah, like what was I going to say about Villanelle? Yeah, I was explaining to people about, I was talking to some people about Killing Eve yesterday, and I said, like, oh, are you getting on watching Killing Eve? They're all like, no. I'm like, oh, it's all right. You should check it out. I said, you know, it's in its third season at the moment, and someone goes, oh, so I guess he doesn't get killed. And then I was explaining the Villanelle character in Jodie Comer. And says, oh, you know, there's this serial killer. She's like, you know, a psychopath. And, you know, she kills all these people. She's going around Europe just assassinating people. It's like, but you like her. But you like her more than the police people.
That's true.
Do you know what's good about Villanelle? She's got a sense of humor about herself.
Mm-hmm.
Like Eve takes herself too seriously. All the police people are taking themselves too seriously. Like Villanelle can have a laugh at herself. And in the world today, we don't have enough of that.
Yeah, it's this kind of bizarre sort of TV movie logic where I resent Eve more for not being a particularly great wife to Nico than I do Villanelle for murdering people. yeah, but look, a little bit of a strange look in the mirror there. But yeah, fantastic character for you to get to, for her to get you to be so intrigued, almost root for such a character is quite a performance. So look, I'm going to say that those are the top two, unless you disagree. Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Jodie Comer.
I'd throw Brosnahan in there, but yeah, like I think I prefer Dreyfus to Brosnahan anyway, so I think let's stick with those two.
Okay. Matt, I get the feeling that you're leaning towards Julia. Give me the pitch.
I don't know. She's the lead of her show. She finished it really well. Yeah, great performance. Funny, dramatic, dark, like, had it all. Yeah, she's just so good. That being said, I think the biggest negative against her, which probably shouldn't be a negative, is that she just won so many already.
Yeah, look, I think we just got to compare, what was the final season of Veep? 7?
Yep.
It's just season 7 of Veep. With season 2 of Killing Eve. It's a tough ask to beat Julia Louis-Dreyfus. We love here at Screen Verdict, but man, if Jodie Comer can't beat her, what more does someone have to do? Be this murderous, cool, hilarious, psychopathic killer. It's pretty much the role of roles, and she nails it. She's the best thing about what is already a very good show. It's my famous performance of, it's my favorite performance of the year. It might even be my favorite performance of the last few years.
Whoa! I thought she was better in season 1.
I don't think so. I think maybe some of the writing was better in season 1 with Phoebe Waller-Bridge on the show.
But I thought
Jodie was just as good in both seasons.
Okay. Fair enough. So what? You were pro Coma. Coma's the one you'd want.
I'm very pro Coma.
Okay, well I'll give it to her. You want to announce it?
All right. And the award for the best female actor in a television series of 2019, it's Jodie Comer from Killing Eve.
Oh, fantastic. And she's here online. Let's connect her through to accept the award. She's having connection issues.
Classic, classic 2020.
Yeah, sorry, the connection's not working, but thank you. That's huge. That's big.
That
she's won a category. How many people have won this category, Jonathan? She enters a very exclusive club.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure like Julia's won like four.
I think only four actresses have won this. I think Glenn Close for Damages.
Oh, that's a good pick.
Amazing performance. It's better used. Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Veep. Amazing performance. Really fantastic. And Amy Poehler from Parks and Recreation.
Ah, classic.
Like, they're all such iconic performances. So she's, you know, that's fantastic. I don't know if I'm missing one.
Look, sometimes you read back the winners. They hold up better sometimes than others. Those hold up. That's a strong company you're in.
It is the benefit of having, like, a repeat winner that's as strong as Julia. Like, if we got a new winner each year, we probably would have picked a dud one year.
Yeah.
We didn't help that. Like,
Julia weeded out the duds is what we're saying.
Yeah. Like, and it did mean for someone to beat her, they needed to be really good, like an Amy Poehler in Parks and Rec. So, a Jodie Comer now in Killing Eve. So congratulations to Jodie. I know that'll mean a lot to her.
All right. Well,
not that Matt, I personally, but I can only imagine. Okay.
Matt, would you like to read out the nominees for Best Male Actor?
Yes. In a television series. Okay, let's go.
Okay.
And the nominees for Best Male Actor in a Television Series are Bill Hader, Barry, Tony Hale, Veep, Jarell Jerome, When They See Us, Joe Keery, Stranger Things, Penn Badgley, Tim Robinson, I Think We Should Leave.
Wow, there you go.
That's the name of the show, Jonathan. I'm not asking you to leave the ceremony.
2019, what a year for male actors. I'm very interested in this Joe Keery pick. Joe Keery from Stranger Things. Let's kick it off there. What did you like about this performance, Matt?
What was there not to like about this performance? Steve, the villain, or the sort of like side villain of season one, becomes America's sweetheart by season three, scooping up ice cream and solving mysteries in Indiana. Wasn't Steve just the bright light of this season? Wasn't he like the...
I cannot think of a character in the history of television that I have disliked as much in season one than loved by season three. What a turnaround for Steve. Like, even if he doesn't win Best Male Actor, comeback character of the year.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And he's so good. Like, he's such a lovable character. And he's so, the performance is great. Like, he gets the comedic moments right. He's been nervous, but he can step up in those dramatic moments. We see him sort of, like, his relationship with Robin gets interesting towards the end of the season. I think he acts that really well.
Absolutely.
He does the action good. Like, it's just, what a great character. What a well-rounded character.
Very interesting.
Actually, one of my old high school friends, Andrew, he said when season three dropped, I caught up with him in Canberra, and he was like, "Matt, I've just watched Stranger Things. I think you are a Steve." He goes, "I think you remind me of Steve."
Like former douchebag jock turned lovable heartthrob.
Yeah. Yeah, I was. I don't know. I think maybe he thought I looked like Steve or something. I don't know. Like,
Yeah, maybe if you got like a little little quaff going, if you put a little bit more product in your hair, you could get that flick going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice. Well, someone else with rather nice hair, Penn Badgley. This is a very interesting performance. He plays, what's his last name? Joe something. I don't even think that's a real
Joe Sixpack. Joe the plumber. Just your regular Joe.
He plays a stalker. He, Joe Goldberg, he goes by, and a little bit similar to Jodie Comer. It's like, how do we get this assassin to like them? This stalker, you kind of catch yourself rooting for him, but then you know you shouldn't, but then you sort of do, but then you know you really shouldn't. It's... The show walks a very fine line between being creepy and unbearable and, like, incredibly gripping. I thought as a show, season one was better, but Penn Badgley, fantastic in both seasons.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment.
Well, you've seen Veep. You're a fan of Tony. Maybe even a friend of Tony, if I could go that far.
Yeah.
What did you think of Tony Hale's performance in the final season of Veep?
Yeah, I have met Tony Hale a few times. He's always very lovely and very, very kind guy. So I do have a lot of warm and fuzzies for Tony Hale. Always very, very, always been very nice when we met each other. Acted like he remembered me each time. So. Anyway, it's such a great character in Veep. Arguably the most iconic character in Veep, you could say. Like, just the bag man that's always whispering the names in the ears. There was a real innocence to Tony Hale's character in Veep, and like of a show of a lot of cynical people. He was a very hopeful person, a very... person who believed in this Selena, but she is a horrible person that treats people horribly. And there's sort of that, like, so he's sort of like, it seems like his heart's in the right place, but where is that place? And he's sort of looking up to someone who is so horrible. And in the final season, you see that sort of catch up with him in an incredibly heartbreaking moment. And I think he was, you know, as funny as ever this season, trying to get a faith-based initiative up and things. But the end, like, he's really the button to the series of Veep. And, yeah, I think it really shows, like, I think it was a really powerful message about what happens if you, like, you know, look up to the wrong people.
Yeah, it's a tragic character. Very funny character, but very tragic as well. And I think quite an iconic character. I mean, I think the show will definitely hold up over time and we'll remember it for a long time. But I think as an individual character, Gary might be the most memorable. Let's see. Bill Hader in Barry. I believe he won last year. Am I correct?
Think he won last year. I think you're right.
Bill Hader for Barry. This is a very, very funny show, but it's a tense and dramatic show as well. Bill Hader kind of shocked me in season one because I always knew he was funny, but I didn't know he could go that deep with his acting. Do you think he reached that benchmark that he set for himself in season one with season two?
I think so. I think he's just as good in season two as season one. Such a great performance. His comedy's great as you'd expect. His drama's really good. No, love Bill Hader. Another assassin. We love we could have the assassin party with Bill Hader and Jodie Comer.
I think they'd be would they be a good couple?
Yeah, I reckon.
I don't know. I feel like Bill grapples with the morality of murdering people more than...
Oh, I mean the character. I think would the actors make a good couple? So, yeah.
That's true.
With the characters. Yeah, continue, and I'll mull that while you...
Yeah, Villanelle would end up killing Barry, for sure.
Yeah, she'd get annoyed with him, wouldn't she? Yeah. It'd be like, I just don't know if I can still do this, man.
Yeah.
Stop stressing. Why are you worried about this? It's fine. I can't deal with this drama. You want to be an actor? Just be an actor. Yeah. Why are you about it?
Yeah, she has no time for these moral quandaries. But yes, I agree. I loved Bill's performance in season two. There was an episode that I hated, and we might get to that in another oh. category. But overall, I love Bill Hader's performance. A more dramatic role. I think it's more dramatic. Jarrell Jerome. Matt, what did you think of him in When They See Us?
Yeah, just to confirm, it is definitely more dramatic. Jarrell Jerome, who plays a young youth who was wrongfully accused of raping someone in Central Park in the 80s and had to serve prison time. No comedy here.
Does he succeed with the drama?
Very much so. And I think it's the last episode of When They See Us, which is an incredible miniseries that looks into that case of the Central Park Five. There's even some, like, you know, Donald Trump at the time was putting out ads in the New York Times wanting them killed, like getting the death penalty. The fix was in with the case. It says a lot about where we've come. You know, there's a scene where one of the family members is watching TV going like, oh, don't worry, in 10 years that Donald Trump's going to be yesterday's news or whatever. But it's just such a horrifying look into how the justice system sometimes works. Like, it used to work in America, but, you know, about how some things haven't changed too when we look through the lens of today and some of the news stories we have. It's just such a timely, powerful piece, and in the last episode, Jarrell Jerome is really at the center of it. He gives an incredible powerhouse performance. It's moving, it's uncomfortable. He's fantastic, really good.
Awesome. Well, let's take a hard left with probably the silliest show in the category. I think you should leave with Tim Robinson. This is a sketch show, so we like to we've combined categories here. You can be sketch, variety, comedy, drama, all sorts of stuff in this category. And I don't think anybody is funnier at being angry than Tim Robinson. Yeah, there's all different kinds of comedic types, and Tim's funny at a few different things. I mean, there's a wild variety of sketches in this show. But if I had to see somebody get mad about something in a scene, I'm hiring Tim Robinson. I'm not just going to orally recount the sketch for you, but if you haven't seen the show, go to YouTube, search I Think You Should Leave Chunky. There is a sketch with him as a game show host where things go wrong with it that has a character mascot called Chunky. And the way Tim reacts to it, I just think is one of the funniest things I've seen on TV. So a worthy comedic performance, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, there are our six nominees. Matt, where are we leaning?
Look. Jarrell Jerome gives such an amazing performance, but it's like very contained to one episode of like a 4 or 5 episode series. So like part of me would rather give it to someone like a Bill Hader, Tony Hale or Joe Carey, who like maintains performance for the course of a season.
Interesting.
So Probably of the list, the two that jump out to me are Bill Hader and Tony Hale.
Yes, I'm thinking the same thing.
Which I think were the two names that were on both of our lists, so that sort of makes sense.
Bill Hader or Tony Hale. You know, I'm not... this is tough. Are you leaning one way or the other, Matt?
I think Tony Hale would be a great winner because of how the series wrapped, and he's just been so... Like, I know we're just judging on this season, but it has been, like, a very consistent performance over a long time. I just think the little things that he's done with that character in the last season as well have just been incredible. So I'd go with Tony Hale.
Wow. Well, there you go. The Screen Verdict Orchestra have picked up their instruments. Matt, would you like to do the honours?
Yes, and the winner of Best Male Actor in a TV Series is Tony Hale for Veep. And this marks Tony Hale. Oh, yeah, let's go. Oh, sorry, he's on the line. Let's get him in. Oh, no, connection issues again. So.
Damn, yeah. COVID. Yeah. Well, we'll forward Tony's message in a future episode of Housekeeping.
Yeah, but anyway, really good. What was I going to say? Timothy Simons won for Veep a couple of years ago, but this is Tony Hale's first win in this category.
Wow, a lot of SVs on that that Veep mantle.
Yes. Yes, and I was going to say maybe someone first won for Veep every year of the SVs, but not quite because
they had a year off.
Yeah, they had a year off or something. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Two down, one to go in the television category. It's television series itself. Let's read the nominees. Here we go. Yep. And the nominees for the best television series of 2019: Barry, Corporate, Stranger Things, Succession, Veep, and Pen 15.
Mm.
There you go. Stacked, stacked list. Thank you, Screen Verdict Orchestra. Now, we have had the chance to touch on a couple of these. So let's maybe start with something that we haven't talked about.
A lot.
Corporate. Corporate's a show that I love. Comedy Central show about being a drone, being a low to mid-level employee at a giant corporation. And this is just a very consistent show. Episode after episode, if anything, it improves. I actually think season two was even better than season one.
Well,
it's a popular show in the Cook Eford household. Very quotable quotes that cannot be repeated due to language on the podcast, but some very funny one-liners from this show. And I think it's only going to have one more season. So everyone, get on the bandwagon now. Before season three comes out, you won't regret it.
Nice.
Matt, we did a Pen 15 podcast, but for those who didn't listen to it, remind people what you thought about Pen 15.
Well, this is a show about two girls that are our age playing sort of versions of themselves when they were in 1999. So it's a really fun show for us to see people who are our age pretending they're still in sixth grade or seventh grade, probably seventh grade, and seeing how that all sort of plays out. It's really funny because they're like all the other people in the show are actual like seventh graders. So that just adds some comedy that you got these two adults pretending that they're kids. And that makes it sort of a unique show. There's something about the tone and comedic sensibilities that make it stand out. So, yeah, I think it's a really funny show. I thought it was a little hit and miss myself, but, really, really good show, and I love that it's on our list.
Yeah, I think I liked it slightly more than you did. I agree, it's a very original show. Two 30-year-olds pretending to be 13-year-olds sounds ridiculous, but when you watch the show, after a while, you do actually start to think of them as being 13. And all the other characters that they go to school with are actually played by 13-year-olds. It's a very fascinating show. And it is a fun time warp for you and me. Because we're 30, 31. They're playing 13-year-olds around the same time that we were 13. It's a very funny and interesting show. And I thought it sounded maybe like a one-trick pony. But I actually thought pretty much every episode was great. So I'm really interested to see what they do in season two.
Yeah.
What else? Let's see. Well, we haven't talked about... I don't think we did a Barry podcast this year. Let's talk about Barry.
Yeah.
Matt, how did season two stack up against season one?
I think the consensus was that it was better season two, and I tend to agree, although I don't think the difference was as big as maybe some people emphasize. I think really good show, great cast. You want to, you know, the storyline's compelling. You want to keep following it along. Really good show. I think, you know, that straddled the drama and comedy in an interesting way where it's not like other shows where I think, oh, it's not comedic enough. But part of me would like it to be a little more funny at the same time, just because I know how great Bill Hader, Henry Winkler and stuff are with comedy.
Yeah, it's... let's see. In terms of... I'm just trying to find the character name. It's a classic... It's a classic character. What is his name? Dang. Who is the bald guy? What's his name?
Bald guy. The bald guy. Oh, yes.
NoHo Hank. NoHo Hank.
He's very funny.
He is hilarious. I think he was even funnier in season two than season one. I thought in season one... I liked the mix of the comedy and the drama, but I thought it was a bit jarring. Sometimes it kind of took a turn which I felt was did not really suit the scene. Some of the comedy felt a little bit forced, although I still really like the show. I think in season two they got that balance down. They really worked out the tone of the show very well. I love NoHo Hank. I thought Bill Hader was fantastic. I mentioned earlier that I hated one episode, and that is the episode where Barry and, Fuchs try to track down that young girl that does karate or taekwondo to kill her. I thought that was so stupid and such a waste of an episode. It was clearly the worst episode of the season because... You know they're not going to kill a girl. That's not something that's going to happen on the show, so I'm not invested in the outcome of that storyline. I'm not rooting for them to kill the girl. And the fact that Barry isn't instantly just leaving Fuchs or even killing Fuchs for refusing to back down on such a ridiculous idea, I found unbelievable and annoying. For what was a fantastic series, the fact that such a bad episode got through is mind-boggling. This is The Fly. If you remember Breaking Bad's Fly episode, this is how bad it is. And I know some people like The Fly. Some people probably like this episode. But to me, it was the most nonsensical, unimportant, stupid, waste of a time, absolute lowlight of the season.
I think this was the most critically hailed episode.
It just got so dumb. I mean, she's got like zombie power. She's like jumping and flipping through the air, biting him on the face. It wasn't funny.
It's like they got the girl from Chandelier music video. And Barry killed a girl from the Chandelier music video. It was sort of that.
The show has you suspend disbelief a little bit because the characters are kind of out there, but it's a somewhat grounded show, and this just got cartoonish. It was so bad.
Yeah. I really liked that episode. I thought it was fun. I just thought it was like, what a ride. This is crazy. Like,
well, there you go. We're split on that one, but I like the series. I like it. It really built the tension towards the end. I really didn't know what was going to happen when Henry Winkler was in the forest and Barry's running to get to the forest in time. This is good TV.
Yeah, it was good TV.
All right. Well, we did a Succession podcast, but once over. What did you think of Succession season 2?
Really good. Strong season. Power dynamics, who's running this business and family. You see some power moves. So if you haven't seen Succession, it's all about this family dynasty and who's going to take over the company. And you see some pretty epic moves and lavish lifestyles too. There's like one episode where like, hey, we're on this yacht, and it's like this really cool yacht, and we can sort of do whatever we want on the yacht, but you know, rich people stuff.
Yeah, I think how I described it was it's like Game of Thrones, but without any of the dragons or the battles. It's very it's very talky, but I do like those mind games, that strategizing. That fight for power, and I thought they varied it up a little bit more in season 2. We went to some different locations. I was a bit disappointed that Kendall was a bit of a non-factor for a large portion of the season, but it ended really strong. So very good season from Succession, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it was a really good season, strong season, people loving it. What haven't we talked about yet?
Stranger Things. It's the last one on the list. Season 3. What did you think?
I love season 1 of Stranger Things, but I sort of thought, I bet this like is going to be one of those shows. A bit like maybe a Heroes or like a Lost to a lesser degree, where you're like, oh, the first season's so good, and then like it's sort of, they don't really know what to do with it and they can't sustain it. But I've loved every season of Stranger Things. Like, they just have such the right balance of fun and drama and action and nostalgia. It's just this wonderful mix of elements. And I think they've done a really good job of, like, after season 1, centering sort of each season around a holiday. Like, you've got season 2 is Halloween and season 3 is 4th of July. And I think, like, it's a little thing, but it helps, like, sort of just make the season feel fun and And I think they've done what Breaking Bad did really well, which was be a drama where you're invested in the characters, but it doesn't take itself so seriously in a way they can do these little corny things and it sort of works.
Yes. I wouldn't say it's a comedy, but it definitely has funny moments. It has, even though it gets pretty scary at times, this is, I would say, the scariest of the three seasons. It still has that kind of like kitschy 80s, like teen comedy vibe to it at times, which I think is, really sort of balances out the show and helps you from getting back, bogged down in teen angst. One of my least favorite things to watch on TV.
Yes. No, very much so. So it's really good Stranger Things season 3. And I think that is something they've done so well on this show, is it's not just a show that's set in the 80s that looks like perfect with all the sets and costumes and all that sort of stuff. But as you say, it sort of feels like the 80s a bit in the way it's filmed and the way they tell the story. And I think that's shows that really like kick up to that top level are shows that don't just get all the stuff right, but they then in the way they film it are able to sort of mirror that style that they're trying to capture. Like, you know, I do think, like, to throw this in again, like, I think, like, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul do that really well, where it's the tone of the filmmaking, not just the sets and the costumes and the music being right.
Yeah, they really nailed it with Stranger Things. A lot of love and care and attention to detail went into this show, and I loved season 1. I liked season 2, But it had its own episode. It had a fly episode with Eleven's detour to Chicago.
Yeah.
I hated that episode. Season three. No bad episodes in season three. They kept it nice and tight. I felt like you missed out a little bit on some of the group dynamics because a lot of the storylines were so separate this season, but that made it all the more rewarding when they came together at the end. So I love season three of Stranger Things, and I think it's a strong contender.
The Scoops Ahoy storyline was so strong. The ice cream storyline, that it did sometimes make the others seem not quite as strong.
That's a good problem to have. One of your stories is so good.
Yeah. Get back to the ice cream shop.
Yeah.
Get back to Scoops Ahoy. I don't care what Will and Eleven are sorting out. Dustin and Steve are solving mysteries with Robin in the ice cream store.
I'd watch a Scoops Ahoy spin-off.
Oh, yeah. It could be a good animated show, actually. Very good animated.
Well, there you go. There are six nominees.
Did we talk about Veep?
So there you go. There's five of our six nominees, leaving us with just Veep to talk about. Matt, what did you think about Veep's final season?
I'm interested because you said this wasn't your favourite season of Veep, so I'm interested to see what your thoughts were on this season.
You know, I thought it was very good. One of, if still not possibly the best comedy on television. I think perhaps that the final season, it felt a tiny bit rushed. I felt like there were some things that were alluded to, some little threads that they laid down that never got paid off. It was very funny, but maybe I think they spent a bit of time on some mechanical things, on some plot things to wrap it up, which maybe took away from some of the comedy, but really only marginally. And the ending was very dark. And look, Veep's not a happy show. I didn't necessarily want a happy ending, or these characters didn't necessarily deserve a happy ending. But when it ended, my gut reaction was, ugh, damn. Whereas a show like Arrested Development, season three, which I thought was the final at the time, was like, perfect, best, loved it. So I'm not saying that they did something wrong, or I can even think of a way they could have ended it in a better way. It just didn't strike home for me in a way that would take it from a great show to like an all-time favorite show.
Okay. I think the final season of it, is it my favorite season of the show? Probably not. And I actually do think it was only 7 episodes this season rather than 10. I don't know why they couldn't have done another 10 episode season. Like, I think, like, every other season was 10 episodes. Why wouldn't you? But anyway, for whatever reason, they thought the story was 7. I guess we'd rather 7 good episodes than, you know, 3 fly episodes and have another one. So, but I just thought, like, they, like, ended it so well. And I think with the choices these characters had made, it needed a super dark ending. I think that, like, was earned. And I just thought it was so clever how they brought everything together. And, like, so many shows we've seen not end well that I was sort of more, like, I think this is one of your better endings for a TV series. I think it's not quite like Breaking Bad where the ending was so good it, like, sort of, you know, goes, oh, it makes the whole rest of the series look better. But I think, like, this is for me the best TV series of the past 10 years probably, and I think they ended it like really well, and I think it's one of the best endings. And I think, like, it's a shame that at the Emmys and things like that it didn't get a bit more recognition for its final season, because, like, you know, you've got on the flip side, you've got, like, you know, the Game of Thrones final winning Emmys and all that sort of stuff. And you go, but that wasn't good. But the Veep final ended really well. Like, you know, so I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought they've gone out on top. And I think it'd be a worthy winner again at the ESPYs.
I think, I'm not sure if I talked about this on the podcast before, but I went to a panel at the Writers Guild with the writers of Veep.
Oh, no, I did. This is news. That's cool.
And it was hosted by Paul Scheer.
Oh, I love Paul Scheer.
Who is very funny. One of the highlights of the panel was, so they talked a bit about the show, the origins, the transition from Amanda Iannucci being the showrunner to David Mandel being the showrunner. He was there, how some of the people became writers and so on. And then they did a Q&A. And at the Q&A, people put your hand up, you got randomly selected. Paul Scheer goes over to this guy, he's put his hand up to ask his question, and he says, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for not relying on cringe comedy, for actually having smart and clever and funny writing in your show, and, you know, not just relying on, like, awkward cringy comedy like The Office or Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
And Paul Scheer goes, so, Dave, I guess the question is, why do you hate Greg Daniels?
Oh, that's so good.
Yes, this isn't that funny, but I saw perhaps interesting. If you're interested in the writing process, the way the Veep writers approached writing the show was always plot first. So you think of it's a comedy, you might think of, well, what are some lines, some character bits or whatever, and then you build the show around that. Their perspective was plot first. We need the storyline to make sense and captivate people's attention as much as possible, and then we make it funny from there. And they were pretty relentless with their rewrites and their pitching and their alt jokes. They had, you know, like 20 alternative jokes for every page. It was quite a process. But anyway, just a little tidbit from David Mandel there for any writers out there.
Yeah, and like, I think the show under Armando, the first four seasons of the show, they had this really cool process where they'd write a script, then the cast would perform it, then they'd do a run-through, like, where they improv the whole thing, obviously not what the script was in the story, and then they'd write a whole new script based on that improv.
Yeah, pretty interesting how collaborative it was and how many versions each script went through.
Yeah,
part of why it's been one of the best shows on TV for the last year. Was it the best show on TV in 2019? Matt, what are your feelings?
I'd say yes. It'd be my pick for best series. It's won two ESPYs for best series already, though, so it's definitely... You know, I don't think that means it shouldn't win, but it probably means I'm less likely to go to the mat for it. I think if it had never won before, I'd be like pulling my hair out going, what are you nuts? Like, Veep's not the best this year. So I think it should be in the mix. I think it should be in the conversation for best of the year. But there are some other very good series too.
I think my two favourites were Stranger Things and Veep.
Oh! You know what? They're my two favorites, Steve.
Okay, we've narrowed it down to two.
Like, they are. That surprises me. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. It's been so basic. V wasn't even on your list of shows.
You know, well, look, some of these things are razor thin. Because sometimes you just get a runaway show where I'm like, oh, this is a 10 out of 10. There's a lot of shows here which are like around an 8.5 or 9. Like, I really liked all of these shows, but there's not like a love. There's not like an Arrested Development or a Seinfeld or something where I'm prepared to die for it to win the ESPY.
Yeah, I'm a bit like that this year too. on this category?
You know, if I had to lean one way, I think I would go Stranger Things.
Whoa.
I thought it was very funny. I thought for such a sort of unique and specific premised show, it did such a good job of introducing new and entertaining things for a third season, maximized a lot of its characters, even improved some of its characters like Steve, and then introduced new characters that we really got to like Erica. So, I don't know. It hit in a lot of the key areas for me.
Yeah. Boy. Yeah, no. I didn't see that. Like, they're my two favourites. So I'm pretty happy with either of these two shows winning. And Veep is a two-time winner in this category already. So it's not like, you know, I think we need hashtag justice for Veep. Yeah, I'm happy with Stranger Things.
Wow. There you go. All right. Screen Verdict Orchestra. They need some glucose to wake themselves up. Here they come. And the award for Best Television Series of 2019 goes to Stranger Things.
Whoa, they've done it. That's great. It's a really good win. And I like that it's like the third season. Like, we know it's not just a one-hit wonder show. Like, they've been doing good work for 3 years now, so nice to see that sort of finally honoured. Like, I know things should be judged just on that one season, but it's nice when you know that, like, when people look at the lists of our top series, like, winners, that they'll go, oh, yeah, Stranger Things, that was a good series.
Like, yeah, you should judge it by the year, by the individual season, but if a show has one good season and then the rest of them suck, in retrospect, that win might look a little dodgy, whereas if it has a whole bunch of great seasons, you can look back and you go, yeah, that holds up.
Yeah, because some people, like, when people look at lists for things, they don't go, like, you know, oh, that show won, that wasn't a great show. And then, like, they don't have the chance for someone to have the call, oh, but no, that season was really, like, you like, yeah, the show sucked, but, like, that year was really good.
Yeah, I mean, if we had been doing the show back in this time period and season one of Prison Break had won an SV, I think that would be totally legitimate. Any other season winning would be outrageous.
Yeah. So I do like that, you know, the sort of the canon of our winners is really good. I think the other winners we've had for best series, so the company it joins are Breaking Bad and Veep. I think there are two-time winners. And then our other winners have been Boardwalk Empire, Better Call Saul. Is that it?
Did Making a Murderer win?
No, I don't think that won.
Don't think so. Well,
might be.
We'll have the interns check up on that. But a strong list of winners.
I think last year another actress won that I forgot. So I think there's another actress in that list, but I can't remember who won actress for TV last year. So
we'll find out for the next podcast. I think we're going to do a two-parter. I think the film category is going to be a second podcast. But as the Screen Verdict Orchestra plays us out, we just want to thank you for listening. Let us know what you thought of our TV nominees and winners.
Yep.
Who got snubbed? facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast. Let us know.
Yeah, who do you think was the best, like, TV of 2019? Pipe in, and next podcast is going to be the best movies of 2019.
We're just getting started.
We're definitely streaming some movies right now, so you want to hear that.
That it was an epic podcast, but that was only 3 of the 6 awards. 3 down, 3 to go. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.